I'm Karen Pettigrew, and I'm here with Jackie B., who will be asking questions from the field. And in just a moment, we're going to welcome Michelle Katz, our intellectual property attorney extraordinaire. She's with the firm of Hush & Blackwell. And today we're going to be talking about the three things you probably don't know about intellectual property, but should. So welcome, Michelle and Jackie. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to all.
Yeah, so Michelle, thank you so much for joining us. I want to share with the listeners that I met Michelle when I served on the board of the National Association of Women Business Owners, the Chicago chapter. And that was really the place that I, through your exposure, started to get an understanding of just what intellectual property is. And, you know, would you just tell us a little bit about you, and then we can jump into just what intellectual property is.
My pleasure, and thank you very much for the invitation to be on your show. I have been practicing intellectual property law, which is a very specialized field, for about a decade and a half. It's hard to believe that it's been that long. Time flies. And I have been focused on this area specifically in the area of trademarks, copyrights, patents, domain name disputes, both on the registration side with the government and also on the litigation side. And we'll get into enforcement of intellectual property probably at some point during the show. And then the things that fall in between, license agreements, due diligence, clearance searches, corporate identity, strategy. And intellectual property is, I know, a scary term for some.
Yeah, it's like when it can be. We hear the word law and attorney, and I think like there's just like this freeze freak out, right? And it's, you know, it sounds pretty scary. So I know you're going to share with us, just what is intellectual property?
So in just briefly, it's like when you do your taxes for the first time. Sometimes that word is also very scary.
Yeah.
When you have to do your taxes and you enlist an expert. Right? People enlist an accountant or someone specialized to prepare your taxes. Well, IP, similarly, is a very specialized.
And that's intellectual property for our listeners.
Shorthand, I'm sorry.
Intellectual property.
We throw that term around. You should throw around that term. People know what you're talking about, even if you don't. Okay? So we throw IP around. It stands for intellectual property. And quite simply, intellectual property is the expression of an idea, okay? It is not just an idea in the abstract. It is the expression of an idea. And one way to express an idea is to write it down. Mm-hmm. If you have a new invention, for example, or a new device, you believe it to be new, novel, non-obvious, those are the three elements of a patent, then you want to express that idea in the form of perhaps figures, drawings, a specification explaining what your invention does. You don't want to just start talking about an idea in the abstract, because an idea in the abstract is very difficult to protect.
And
it's not
protect,
until you...
Yeah, you mean like to really own as proprietary to
exactly.
To it being yours.
Right. And you don't want to go around talking about your idea until you have it in an expressed form, right? Say you come up with a new recipe. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe we have some chefs, amateur or otherwise, out there. Mm-hmm. And you want a copyright, because a recipe is covered by a copyright.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
Yes, indeed. So you may want to explore selling or having someone assist you in manufacturing your idea, but you can't protect it until you have it in an expressed form. You need to write down that recipe.
Okay.
Right? Trademarks. Trademarks. We see trademarks everywhere we go. Okay.
That's a little TM behind, you know, superscripts behind names.
Uh-huh. What a TM means, it stands for trademark, and it means that the owner of that trademark is using that word or design or picture,
mm-hmm.
we call it our logo,
mm-hmm.
to connect with particular goods.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're walking through the grocery store, for example, and you're deciding between various brands of salsa, for example, right? And you see
one of my favorites.
Oh, what? I didn't even know that. Then the consumer identifies usually a feeling, a goodwill about a particular brand, especially if they've had that brand before or if they've seen commercials for a particular brand and they want to try it, right? A trademark or brand name is anything that identifies the source of goods or services from those of another mm-hmm. when used in commerce. The idea behind all intellectual property, whether it's a trademark, a copyright, or patent, is to distinguish yourself from others, that you are the single source. The single source, that's a very important in the statutes and in the codes, that it's to distinguish you, to separate you from your competitors.
Right. And so there's a lot of the work that I do with people is around helping them understand how to differentiate themselves in the marketplace. And so that differentiation, I mean, there are unique attributes kind of to what they do and how they do it and how that looks. And I think that's what you're talking about when you talk about expression. It is like how your product or idea is represented, you know, kind of to the outer world. And that can be in picture or in writing or in process even. Can you protect a process?
You can. There are certain, for example, methods of doing business
mm-hmm.
that would fall under the patent regime.
Okay.
And even though the case law right now, we had a recent case, the Bilski case that came down, it still allows methods of business, without business method patents. Some are hard, it's difficult to enforce, but it is possible,
mm-hmm.
absolutely, to pursue a patent in that area.
Okay.
Patents usually we associate with, naturally technology, various technologies, biochemistry, pharma, mechanical patents. We're thinking of devices and inventions, but methods also.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a process. Sometimes it actually goes to the process of the technology itself, how to apply paint or something like that.
Wow.
Okay. So right. So it can be somewhat broad, actually, which is why you want to work with someone who has expertise in the area of technology where you want to protect your invention.
Right.
It's very difficult to be a generalist, a general attorney, and practice intellectual property law. We don't see it very often. I myself, but my colleagues as well, in and outside my firm, we receive referrals from other lawyers.
Right.
And because when they get a... Mm-hmm.
No, I was going to say, I can imagine you getting referrals because it seems like an area that is becoming increasingly... It's continuing to grow, kind of like technology, and to become complex because, I think about this, and I think it feels on the surface very corporate kind of, right? And, I mean, that may have been the obvious place where there was a lot of activity around intellectual property. But we do have a lot of listeners who may be small business owners or artists and creatives, maybe, you know, healers or service providers. And, you know, I think, but you can share your insight, that this is still completely relevant to all of us, as well as, you know, an understanding of what this is, but also an application. Because, I mean, especially as service providers or artists, I mean, there are things that you probably do that's really unique to you, and whether that's a look or feel, and it deserves to be kind of protected as an asset, you know, as an asset in your business.
Yes, I should dispel one assumption that many entrepreneurs believe, because I see it often as I'm working with NABO members, National Association of Women Business Owner members, that tend to be on the smaller side, or even individuals, that they cannot afford to protect their intellectual property, and it's just not true. We work with clients of all shapes and sizes, from individual inventors or authors or artists, and we work with Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. And everybody has their budget, right? So we start with what's most important. Oftentimes I find that the thought put towards protecting intellectual property is out of order with small businesses or solopreneurs, mm-hmm. where they get their stationery ordered and their cards
and their logos designed.
And they take for granted the name of their company. And the name of their company may very well be a trademark. Oftentimes it is. And they're using it as a trademark. They are using it in the sense that they are trying to connect their consumers or potential consumers, clients, to their company as a single source for particular goods, right, using a particular name. So Beyond Blind Spots, for example, there should be only one, right?
Yay!
Right?
There should be only one.
There should be only one. That's right.
Okay. Not to quote, you know, one of the great, you know, Highlander movies, but there really should be only one. And that's the idea, is that when people hear Beyond Blind Spots, that phrase, okay, because trademarks can be more than just a word. They can be a number of words together. Mm-hmm. They can be taglines, designs, as I mentioned earlier. The idea is that people associate, of course, positive attributes when they hear Beyond Blind Spots, and they know that it's you. They know that you're the source for excellent information for entrepreneurs and executives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and on and on and on. And the other concepts that you want people to associate with your trademark.
Right, and so when we think about smaller businesses and solopreneurs, I mean, there really is. I mean, and we may think, oh, it's okay because I'm really only using this name, you know, in my tiny little marketplace here, and it probably isn't, and it won't be such a big deal. But it really could come back to get you, right? If you're using a name and you haven't really kind of checked to see, or if you are using language and you've not checked to see if it's really available to be used.
That's right. And often what I have found is that the concern about whether there are others out there already using the same or similar mark to the one, and that mark just means trademark, it is a very good idea before you start spending money on the cards, the website design, all these things, have you done any kind of risk assessment, any kind of, sometimes it's called clearance opinion or clearance searching, to find out whether there's anyone else out there? And when I say out there, I do mean the United, I mean in the United States and the U.S. territories, because when you have a federal registration, meaning you file an application with the government and there's an examining process and they run their own search and determine whether your application should register, and it's actually a lengthy and involved process. It can be. Involved process taking about 1 to 2 years, okay? And we can talk about the significance of that. Then, assuming you get that registration, then you can stop others from using a mark that doesn't even have to be exactly the same as yours, but something that would be similar, and someone else is using that mark with similar, the same or similar goods or services.
Okay.
So it can be very powerful to own this piece of paper.
Right. And to really, and to really help protect your investment. And we are, time flies. We're coming to our first break. So I want you to hang on to that thought, Michelle. And in just a minute, we're going to return on Beyond Blind Spots. Welcome back. I'm here with our guest, Michelle Katz, and we are talking about this seemingly mystical, mythical area of intellectual property and protecting ideas and concepts and ideas, but not in the abstract, concepts and our brands, really. And, Michelle, I know we were talking during the break a little bit about why it's important. It's one of these areas where I think, especially as a small business or as a startup or as a solopreneur, it's one of those areas that can seem, you know, to, you know, be scary and maybe it's going to be super expensive, but there's really valid reason for doing a little due diligence on the front end. And I know you wanted to talk a little bit more about clearances and in the event that you are sued, how, you know, having a clearance and having done your due diligence may protect you, right?
Absolutely. That is something we routinely recommend when a client comes to us with a new trademark, to have us run a... Sometimes people, the listeners may have heard of the searching, trademark searching as clearance. We tend to refer to it as risk assessment these days because there's never a 100% guarantee that you have searched everything. And there are different kinds of searches based on budget, need, time. Some searches are just checking the what's pending or registered with the government, the United States Patent and Trademark Office, but others are actually checking the internet, domain names, something we call common law usage, where someone's just using it without trying to afford any type of federal protection. But in the United States, at least, you can obtain certain rights. They're very limited, but you can obtain certain trademark rights just from using your mark. It's limited. The rights are limited to the geographic scope and where you're actually using that mark, but that can be powerful depending on the type of business. Sometimes restaurants, if they're local, they may want to just use their trademark and they're not planning on expanding, although that seems rare these days. But It is possible that you have no intention on going beyond your city.
Local geography. Mm-hmm.
Right, and so maybe the expense isn't worth it to you for a federal registration, but maybe you want to register in your state.
Right.
Which does exist for the listeners out there. Every state actually has its own trademark law.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to take the expense, if you're planning on branching out into other states, we would recommend filing for a federal registration. It just makes sense, especially if you're advertising on the rate, on the internet, radio.
I was going to say, what if you've got an internet presence? Does that seem to cross over?
Yes, it does. And so here's where the caveat can come in. If you started using your business, using your trademark in association with the goods or services of your business, and someone files and registers, they don't know you exist. Okay, they're in a different state. Say you're in Illinois. Okay, you've opened up your shop in Chicago. You didn't file to register your trademark.
Right.
But someone else did, say in Utah.
Right.
Very far away from you. But with the internet, with the globalization, Utah is not so far away anymore.
Right.
And if they were to obtain a federal registration, nobody knew you existed, okay? And they started using after you. And then you decide, using their trademark after you, because we're a use-based nation, okay? Mm-hmm. Your priority rights are based on when you started using the trademark.
Okay.
And you can ask me questions if that's unclear to you. What happens is if you want to expand outside of Chicago, for example, okay, but someone else has a federal registration, they could stop you from expansion.
Under that trademark, right?
That's the idea. If they're mm-hmm. using, say we have Beyond Blind Spots, if you don't mind me using your company name as an example, Beyond Blind Spots in Chicago, say there was someone who started in Utah a Beyond Blind Spots for similar services. Mm-hmm. In your view, okay? And you wanted to expand. They could prevent you from expanding even if you started using the trademark earlier because
right.
they have a federal registration.
Right. And I didn't file. And that would apply to the internet, right? Would that apply to internet commerce?
Yes, it would.
Yeah,
and that's what you'd have to prove. I mean, now we're talking about, but once we start getting to the merits of the case, right, then litigation can be very expensive.
Oh, brother. Yeah. We don't even need to go there, right? We can do a little due diligence, and it seems so daunting and scary up front, but mm-hmm. a little due diligence can
go a long way.
Yeah,
a little due diligence goes a long way. And this due diligence is really twofold. It mm-hmm. really has multiple implications. Mm-hmm. Because on one hand, you come up with a name, okay? Don't fall in love with that name yet, okay? Okay, wait for an attorney to do a risk assessment for you,
right.
okay,
right.
before you fall in love with that name. I know that's very difficult. But have them prepare an opinion, okay, if it's good news, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not good news, I typically call and say, hey, listen, why don't we move on, okay? It's not mm-hmm. worth the cost for preparing a formal letter, a formal opinion, if the news isn't good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's good news, prepare a letter. What that does is that if for some reason you were sued later down the road, you could say, aha, but I relied on my opinion of counsel.
Right.
Okay? And that is a defense to certain damages. okay, if you were, in fact, sued for trademark infringement.
Right.
Okay? Or, not just that, if you were even, not everything goes to court, okay? A lot of these things are resolved fairly amicably before any complaint is filed.
Right.
Just with a letter. Often mm-hmm. that's how these things start, is you may receive a cease and desist letter. Or maybe, this is the flip side, you want to be that person sending the cease and desist letter. You think that someone is infringing your mark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Your customers are confused because there's no longer a single source.
Right.
There's no longer a single source of your trademark connected to particular goods or or services.
Right.
Okay? So you want to stop them, stop confusion or potential confusion. And so you believe that you are, based on your attorney's opinion, perhaps you've already secured a federal registration to stop others. So those are just two very good reasons for running due diligence before you start investing in your trademark. And sometimes I do an exercise. I've done a number of speaking engagements with entrepreneurs, and there's a great exercise that I've done in the past where if you write down everything you've spent money on that has your trademark on it, often that's your company name, okay? And what if one day you received a cease and desist letter that you had to stop using that name? If you add up all of those line
ways
items,
and places that you've applied your name.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, and if you had to just flip a switch, one, would your clients be able to find you if all of a sudden you had to change names?
Oh, yeah.
What is the cost to, we call it rebranding, when you go from one name to another name?
Right.
Okay.
It's kind
That's
of starting over.
Right. You're basically starting over.
Yeah.
And, you know, a clearance opinion, we're talking about, I mean, it's going to vary depending on the attorney, but usually these things are less than $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're not, you know, I don't want to be afraid to use numbers here. Not everyone charges the same. Depends on your city and what's actually asked of you. Of the attorney to do what there's, as I mentioned, there's different kinds of searching. But, you know, we're talking about basically something under $2,000.
Right.
And now go back and look at that line item list of everything that you've spent
your
money
on. Right. And how you invested around it. And,
right.
And there is equity in even just the goodwill, as you've said. You know, what people have come to associate with the name around you and your city and your locale or whatever, there's the cost of switching that is
company
beyond, and it's beyond financial, right?
Oh, right.
There are
That's
costs
right.
that are beyond that. So,
mm-hmm.
It's really powerful. I know that Jackie has a question from the field for you, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, we have a couple of questions, but I'm thinking that we've covered a lot to do with the internet
and
the global piece. So I think hopefully our listeners are okay with, if they don't have any questions. If so, please do let us know. But right now, do you have any recommendations for clients or business owners or solopreneurs that don't have a huge budget, but they're looking to get legal support?
Mm-hmm. I do. I do, in fact. And I recommend to many of my clients, go online, right? Because if people want to be seen, they're generally online.
Mm-hmm.
Run not just on Google, MSN, try a number of IP providers, and run searches. Run the name that you're interested in. Run variances. See what comes up. What are they selling? right? Are they selling something? What are we, does your name perhaps have a different, could it be translated? That's another idea that I give to people is, you know, if their trademark is in Spanish, for example, run it in English also. See what else is out there, because in the trademark world, a translation is as if it is in whatever it is in English. So, for example, if you have the word viva, okay, live, in connection with whatever it is, say it's
a health club.
Great. Yes, that's great. Okay. See if there is live or life or something like that in connection with health services, right? Maybe even go broader and see if there's any kind of dietary supplements or something, something in the food and beverage that is with life, right? So what I tell entrepreneurs is those with presumably smaller budgets, there are ways to shave down legal costs, and that is by doing some work on your own. However, when you get that information back, do you know how to analyze? Do you know what is too close that it may not be worth pursuing? So even if you are doing some work on your own, I do recommend talking to someone with expertise in the trademark area, to actually go over your search results.
Yeah.
Okay. And the internet, while a wonderful source of information, a very large source of information, doesn't mean that you've done enough. I definitely recommend checking what's actually been filed with the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
Oh yeah, you can run a search directly. On your own, yeah. It's not the full search, I know.
Right. But what you can do, and I'll give the listeners the website, it's www.uspto.gov, and there is a trademark database. Again, do you understand the results that you've gotten? Are you running enough variances? So while you can, and I encourage, especially for people who have a long list of names that they're interested in, do some recon on your own, and then perhaps take the ones that you feel are the clearest, the ones that seem to offer the least amount of risk in using.
Mm-hmm.
Contact a lawyer, and at least you may have knocked out
a fair amount of footwork. Yeah.
A lot of work, which in work does translate into dollars.
Hours, yeah.
Save.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. So we are...
Oh, pardon me. Sorry.
I was just going to say we're coming up to the close of the second segment, and I want to let our listeners know that when we come back, we're going to have our giveaway, and we're going to get our tips from Michelle about the things that we really need to know that we probably didn't. If there's more, we may have covered a lot of that, but we'll be back in just a moment here on Beyond Blind Spots. So, welcome back. I'm Karen Pettigrew here with Michelle Katz, intellectual property attorney, sharing her wisdom with those of us who are a little bit phobic about getting into this world of protection, but with things happening all over the globe and the internet and all kinds of things, it's important information for us to know, just to be armed with some good insight and information. So we're at the top of the third segment, and it's time for our giveaway. And today I'm giving away something a little bit different. I am offering a 20-minute blind spot intuitive reading to the first person to email me each day between now and our next broadcast, so between today and next Wednesday. You have to put Beyond Blind Spots radio in the subject header and email me here at beyondblindspots@unity.fm. And we'll see how many of you we can help move beyond those blind spots. So, okay, onward with our conversation. Jackie, I think you had something.
Right. During the break, Karen, we were discussing with Michelle a bit more about that global piece and global protection piece. And Michelle, maybe you can just kind of share with us your insights on, you know, what's important, those pieces that we don't, that we didn't share with the listeners.
Absolutely. Trademarks are used all over the world. And just because you use a trademark in connection with your goods and services in the U.S. doesn't mean you don't use them elsewhere also, in Canada or in Mexico or in Europe or Asia. And there are ways, just like in the U.S., to register your trademarks abroad. What I recommend doing is contacting whoever your local trademark expert is, and perhaps they can connect you with an IP attorney, an intellectual property attorney, in the region where you require assistance. Because
okay.
In order to, if you, for example, are selling goods or services in Canada, your U.S. attorney would work with a Canadian attorney to help you achieve, for example, a registration or a clearance search or something that involves Canadian trademark law. And the same goes for elsewhere. And I know, at least in my Rolodex, I have trademark lawyers, lawyers of all kind, but in particular intellectual property lawyers all over the world. So
yeah.
I work with my clients to secure
registration
all over.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. That's right.
So that's awesome. Okay.
Mm-hmm, because you cannot enforce your trademark unless you have, you know, you need to have
unless
standing. You need to have a registration or,
mm-hmm.
or something, a presence in that country or region.
Right. And so for all of us who are maybe in process of creating our heart's desires, right, they're creating those visions as entrepreneurs of these things, the way that we want to offer and offer ourselves to kind of the planet, you know, this is an opportunity for you to really protect that dream. And it doesn't have to be particularly cumbersome, but like we said, a little work up front goes a long way for holding on and maintaining your dream. So, Michelle, we're kind of at this place, and I know you've got some other tips, perhaps, that you want to share with us, and we'd love to hear them. Anything else?
I would be happy to share some tips. I would say the first tip, since we spend a lot of time on trademarks, my
mm-hmm.
first tip relates to trademarks, and that is understand the difference between a good trademark and a not-so-good trademark, okay?
Okay.
This has to do with your selection of a trademark.
Okay.
There's a hierarchy to trademarks, and you want to pick a good name.
Okay.
So some things that go into good names to think about is, does it describe your goods? Trademarks that describe your goods are actually not good trademarks.
Really?
Okay. Yep.
Wow.
That's right. The idea is you want to come up with an arbitrary name. And I'll give the listener some examples, because I know I know it seems to defy logic, okay?
It does seem to defy
logic. I know. This is why my last tip I'm giving now, my last tip is find an expert in the IP, the intellectual property area, okay?
Okay.
An arbitrary mark, for example, Nike. What does that mean?
Yeah, okay.
What does it actually mean? Another one, Kodak. What does that actually mean? Okay? the government puts a lot of weight on arbitrary marks because it takes a lot more marketing, a lot more effort to connect its consumers with what they're selling. Okay? So when you achieve
proprietary.
Right. When you achieve that recognition, right, that's a lot more difficult than if you were selling shoes and you call it shoe store, right?
Yeah.
And how can you distinguish yourself in the market if you're using a generic term or something that's descriptive? Okay? That's so descriptive it warrants really no protection. Okay? So that's arbitrary marks. There's also suggestive marks. Not as good, but still very good and very common to find in the marketplace. For example, this doesn't exist to my knowledge, but beans. Maybe it's a coffee shop. Maybe it's a grocery store. Who knows? You're not exactly sure, but once you know what they're selling, go, oh, okay, that's cute. That makes sense. Okay.
Got it. Okay, so that's a...
They're called suggestive marks. Okay?
Okay, great.
But then when you see the nail shop on the corner that says nails, 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 right? What are they offering? There's no protection there. Okay, so that's my first tip.
Okay.
The second tip related to due diligence. There's a common misconception that if you clear your name through the Illinois Secretary of State or wherever you're located, then that's trademark clearance. It has nothing to do with trademark clearance.
Uh-huh.
So if there happens to be your company name but with one other word, okay, so say it's Beyond Blind Spots
Consulting,
right? Mm-hmm. You still may be able to get Beyond Blind Spots in your state as far as a corporate name.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Corporate names are not the same. They're not running trademark searches, okay? The same goes for URLs. If you are trying to register a domain name, but you add an S or some other letter to it, just because it's available does not mean that you have done your due diligence for what's required under trademarks. Okay.
So I think I want to just underscore what you just said. For those of our listeners who may have be registered with the state, your business is registered with your state, you may have a domain name that is tied to your business that does not constitute registration of a trademark. Is that correct?
Okay. It absolutely doesn't. They do not. It is an entirely different level. It's a much lower level of clearance. It's more of an exact name, whereas trademarks looks at similarities.
Okay.
They also look at what you're selling. Okay. It's a much deeper analysis, much more involved. Also, another tip. We haven't talked about patents very much since the opening segment, but for this may apply to some of your listeners, that if you offer for sale your invention more than a year before you file an application with the government, your invention just became public domain and you will not be
able
to obtain a patent. Okay.
What?
I know that entrepreneurs are very gung-ho and we want to get the sales, and I understand. We have abbreviated applications that we can file for, you know, and it's not just us. Experts, they're called provisional applications. Get something on file with the United States Patent and Trademark Office if you're going to start even offering for sale your invention. It may not even be manufactured yet. It doesn't matter. If you offer for sale more than 1 year prior to when you file public domain, you have lost all rights in your invention.
That's just huge. And in fact, it gave me goosebumps because
it's very scary. Yes, it can be very scary. It can turn around litigations. It can. It's a very powerful consequence.
Yeah. So like, let's just say that you've been out there and you've been testing it, but you've been selling it. Now, does that apply if you've been like giving it away, or does it apply in either case, whether you've been selling it? Let's say it was a prototype.
R&D R&D is acceptable in most circumstances, but that's R&D. You know, that's not you're not selling it. If you're offering things for sale, or even if you're doing giveaways, be careful, because there's also a publication rule where if you are publishing, okay, that your invention more than a year before you file, you also may lose rights.
Oh, my
your
goodness.
Rights. Okay, so you need to be very careful when it comes to preserving your patent rights.
You know, I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off, but this is a perfect place to come to a close. We've reached, believe it or not, we're coming to the top of the hour. And we got there so quickly. I think it's fascinating. I know that it's your comments and conversation has been really helpful. I hope that people take it to heart. And I think that you would punctuate your tips, because you've already given a hint by encouraging people to find somebody local, right, that can help them sort through this.
Because intellectual property is the statutes, the code is actually federal, mostly on a federal level, then you can contact someone of your choice within, you know, the United States for U.S. intellectual property law. So if you want someone local, that makes sense, but you don't feel limited to just your local choices.
Oh, sweet. Thank you so much for joining us, Michelle.
Great show. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, and to our listeners, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in to Beyond Blind Spots. And next week we'll be talking with Jenny Clark, the CEO of Career Mapping, and she'll be talking about helping us discover our strengths and how to make the transition for those of you who are thinking about it, make that transition from employee to entrepreneur. Remember, you have the power to transform blind spots into bright spots. Listen deeply for the guidance and tune in here next week for more on Beyond Blind Spots.